Oil boys shoot glares in Reed's direction. His mouth tightens. I tell my stupid heart that it's not allowed an ounce of sympathy for Reed. Whatever he's reaping here at the breakfast table, I know he's sown 1,000 times over. Morning, Easton, I chirp. Have I missed anything interesting in bio? I want to bring up the strange hug from last night, but this isn't the place. Still, I need to know that he's okay. Easton has a few addiction problems. I think he misses his mom, and is trying to fill that gap with everything, and finding that nothing works. I've been there.
Yeah, we're dissecting pigs.
Seriously? I make a gagging noise. Glad I skipped.
Nah.
He nudges me with his shoulder.
I'm kidding. You haven't missed shit. Assessments are next week, though.
Oh, crap.
Don't worry. Callum will take care of everything, won't you, Dad?
Easton sticks his chin out. Callum ignores Easton's challenge and nods placidly.
Yes, if you need more time, Ella, I'm sure that can be arranged.
Because in his world, money buys anything, including extra time to take standardized tests. Maybe I won't even need to take a college entrance exam. I don't know whether that makes me happy or upset. Both, I guess. Confused emotions are the standard in my head right now. Like when Reed takes a seat next to me, my body rejoices, remembering all the pleasure he pulled out of it. And my heart flips in memory of how he filled the cracks in my heart with affection and warmth that I hadn't even realized I needed in my life. But my head reminds me that this boy was terrible to me. The one concession I can make is that he tried to warn me off, but I kept after him like a lovesick idiot, telling him that he wanted me and that he just needed to admit it. So I guess we're both to blame. He told me to stay away. He told me I didn't belong. If only I'd listened to him.
Your bagel offend you in some way? Easton asks.
I look down to see my breakfast lying in shreds on the plate. I push it aside and pull the bowl of fresh fruit, granola, and yogurt toward me. The single greatest thing about living in the royal house might be the amount of food in the kitchen at all times. There's no eating one meal a day, or hoping that your body doesn't revolt if all you can get your hands on is a single fast food taco. And everything is fresh, bright, green, and healthy. If Callum had just reminded me of the contents of the refrigerator, maybe I wouldn't have put up as big of a fight. Not feeling the carbs this morning, I tell Easton.
So, baby sis, what are we gonna do today?
He rubs his hands together.
I hear we're not going to school. Well, the twins are, but that's 'cause they're too dumb. They miss one class, they'll flunk out.
Both twins give him the finger. I'm going over to Valerie's.
Great, Easton says. I like Val. Sounds like we're gonna have a good time.
You missed the pronoun I. Everyone at the table is watching our exchange.
I didn't miss it,
Easton grins sunnily, but his eyes are darting all over.
I'm conveniently ignoring it. What time are we leaving?
I wrap my fingers on the table. Easton, pay attention. I wait until his frenetic gaze lands back on me. You are staying here, or you can leave, but either way you're not coming with me.
You're saying words, but they're not really making any sense. When do you want to meet at your car?
I look around the table for help, but everyone averts their faces. Across from me, the twins are nearly shaking with suppressed laughter. Callum peers over the top of his newspaper.
You should give in now. If you don't let him ride with you, he'll show up at the Carringtons anyway.
Easton tries to look gracious and contrite, but triumph gleams in his eyes. Fine.
But we're painting our nails and talking about which maxi pads are the most absorbent. There might even be scientific experiments. His smile doesn't waver, but the twins groan. Gross, they say in unison, and push away from the table. Sawyer, I'm going with that, taps Sebastian on the shoulder. Ready to go? Seb tosses a napkin on the table and rises.
I guess. I'd rather learn about geometry than maxi pads.
Let's leave in about 15,
Easton says to me before bounding out of the kitchen. I rub my forehead as a pain starts to develop over my right eye.
Ella.
Reed is so quiet I barely hear him. I ignore him and stare out the window at the clear, still water in the pool, wishing life were as smooth and calm.
I'll leave you two to finish breakfast.
Callum folds his paper noisily. The chair legs scrape against the tiled floor when he stands.
I'm glad you're back, Ella. We missed you.
He places a hand on my shoulder, and then leaves the room. I'm done, too. I throw my spoon down next to my uneaten breakfast.
Forget it, I'm going.
Reed gets to his feet.
You need to eat, and it's obvious you won't while I'm here.
I keep ignoring him.
I'm not your enemy, he says,
unhappiness coloring his voice.
I didn't tell you about my past because it was messed up, and I didn't know how you'd react. I was wrong, okay? But I'm gonna make it right.
He leans down, his mouth inches away from my ear. His scent surrounds me, so I force myself not to breathe. Force myself not to let my gaze linger on his sculpted arm, which flexes as he braces one hand against the table.
I'm not giving up,
he murmurs, his warm breath tickling the side of my neck. I finally offer a response, low and mocking.
You should.
I'd screw Daniel before I'd get back together with you. His breath whistles between his teeth as he sucks in a breath.
We both know that's not true. But I get it. I hurt you, and now you want to pay me back.
I look him in the eye. No, I don't want payback. It's not worth the mental energy, and I don't plan on spending much time thinking about you. I don't care about you or your girls. I just want to be left alone.
His jaw hardens.
I'm willing to do almost anything for you. I'd go back in time to change things if I could.
He gazes down at me with determination.
But I'm not leaving you alone.
Chapter 10. Easton is sprawled on my bed when I walk in. He's got a can of pop, not beer, thank goodness, cupped between his legs, and my remote in his fist.
How do you get in here? I demand.
You didn't close your door all the way.
He pats the empty space on the mattress.
Hop up. I'll watch ESPN while you call Val.
I already called before I came down for breakfast. I shove a few things into my backpack and sling it over my shoulder. You guys have a thrift store around here?
Easton rolls off the bed and joins me in front of the closet.
No clue, but if you're tired of your clothes, you can donate them during formal week. They have a charity drive.
Formal week? I start to ask, and then decide that I don't really want to know. I'm not attending any stupid Astor Park shit in the future.
Of course they do, I mutter. Callum says I have money, I guess I can access it.
What do you want it for?
To buy clothes.
You have them.
He gestures toward the closet. And I'm gonna torch these and buy new ones, okay? Anger and impatience make me ruder than I mean to be. I don't see why it's a big deal that I want to shop. Girls are supposed to like to shop. Easton studies me with shiny eyes that are far more intuitive than I give him credit for.
You're not a regular girl, Ella. So yeah, it's weird. But I'm putting it together. Brooke bought these clothes. You hate Brooke. These clothes gotta go.
I cross my arms. Did Reed tell you, or have you known all along?
He just told me, Easton admits.
Good news, your balls have been saved. I push him out of the way and grab a pair of sneakers. I'm going to build a new life, starting today. It won't include guys who sleep with their dad's girlfriends and romance their stepsister on the side. I will also cut any bitch who tries something with me. Good thing bitch number one, Jordan, is at school today, or I might shove her into her pool with some rocks tied around her neck.
You have a mean look on your face. It's crazy hot. Promise me you'll let me orgasm before you kill me?
Easton jokes.
You're gonna get slapped very hard by someone someday. I know you mean that as a threat, but honestly, I can't wait. Sounds like a good time.
Whatever girl takes on Easton is going to have to hold a whip in one hand and a pistol in the other. I think he's uncontrollable, though. I pick up the key fob of my gorgeous, custom-painted convertible. I'd been really sad to leave that baby behind.
You think Val will have some food for me?
Easton asks. I'm getting hungry again.
Go downstairs, then, because you're not coming with me.
Then it's gonna be Reed.
I stop at my bedroom door.
What are you talking about?
Dad's worried you're gonna skate again, so one of us is on you at all times. Good news is you get to piss by yourself, but there's an alarm on your window. I throw my keys on the dresser and stalk into the bathroom.
See the red sensors here?
Easton leans forward and points out two tiny pinpoints of light in the casing of the window.
Dad'll get a text message if you open it. So, who's going with you to Val's, me or Reed?
This is insane. I shake my head. Fine, let's go. Easton obediently follows me down the stairs and out into the carport. I'm not in the mood to talk, but he has other ideas, as I drive through the huge gates.
I'm the one who should be pissed off. You ran off without a word. I was worried. You could have been killed or something.
I've already had this conversation with Reed, thank you. Seems like I'm not the only one you're mad at. What's with you and the twins glaring at Reed during breakfast?
He's being a dick.
You're just now discovering this. Easton stares at his sneakers when he answers,
It didn't matter before.
There's no point in responding. Besides, the Carringtons live less than 10 minutes away, and I'm already pulling into their driveway. I spot Val at the back door, and she doesn't look happy.
What's wrong? I ask when we reach her.
She nods toward Easton.
What's he doing here?
Sorry, one royal has to be with Ella at all times, he says. Dad's orders.
Val looks at me incredulously.
For real?
No idea, but I promise you if I could have left Easton at home, I totally would have.
Hey, you're hurting my feelings, he protests.
And because that might be true, I plead with Val. He's not going to say anything. She rolls her eyes.
Whatever, just get in here.
Got anything to eat?
Easton asks as we pass through the kitchen.
Help yourself.
She waves a hand toward the counter that's topped by a cornucopia of fruit and a cake underneath a glass case.
You can stay here. Ella and I need alone time.
Oh, no, I want to come with you.
Easton leans past me.
Ella told me you guys were testing the absorbency of maxi pads. I'm interested in that myself.
Val gives me a confused look. Easton, please, give us just 10 minutes by ourselves. I beg.
Fine, but I'm eating this entire cake.
Knock yourself out, champ, Val says, as she drags me out onto the sun porch that runs the length of her house. The Carrington place is a true southern mansion, with big porches, fluted columns, and a lawn that looks like it's cut by hand. I imagine years ago, the ladies of the house sat on rocking chairs in big dresses and with lace-gloved hands holding painted fans, saying things like, My land! I may have watched Gone with the Wind one too many times. Val collapses on one of the floral couches.
I think Tam might be cheating on me.
No. I suck in a shocked breath and plop down beside her. Tam and Val have been dating for over a year, He's attending college only a few hours away, and from what Val has allowed to slip out, she and Tam have a lively sex life that involves things like showing off and phone sex. I haven't even had person sex yet, let alone kinky sex. If any relationship could survive the long-distance thing, it would be theirs, right? Why do you think that? He was supposed to visit me last month, remember? I do. She'd been so excited, but then he bailed at the last minute. You said he couldn't come because he was slammed with homework. At her miserable expression, I guess. That was just an excuse. She releases a quavery sigh. He called last night and said we needed to talk. Oh, no. So we talked on the phone, and he told me that college was fun and that it made him realize how much of a child he was in high school. He hasn't cheated on me, he swears, but he thinks that the distance and the temptations are too much for him, and that to be honorable, she spits out the word, he needed to make sure I was cool with him seeing other people. Hold up, I raise my hand. He didn't call to break up with you, but instead he wants your permission to cheat? Right? Val gives me an angry look. That's super shitty. And you told him to... I hope you told him to stick his permission down his own throat where he chokes on it, I want to say, but I don't want to look judgmental either. That's the last thing she needs now. Later, yes, I'll remind her how awesome she is and that she doesn't need a douche like Tam sucking up her energy. But for now, I'm going for supportive. Well, I hope you told him how you felt. I finish. I told him he could screw all the girls he wanted, but he wasn't ever getting another go at me. She sweeps her hair back in a careless gesture, but her hand is trembling, and her eyes are glassy with tears. His loss, you know that, right? I keep telling myself that, but I don't feel any better. Part of me wants to steal Jordan's car and drive up to state. I'm not sure what I'll do when I get there. Either kick him in the balls or kiss him. She shudders and then peers at me out from under her eyelashes. I kicked Reed in the balls for you, by the way. You did? A wild laugh escapes as I envision tiny Val kicking giant Reed between his legs. What brought that on? His mere existence, his smug face, his refusal to tell me where you were. Val throws herself at me and hugs me again. I'm so glad you're back. Ahem. I look up to see Easton standing there, smirking at us.
I thought you guys wanted to talk. If there's gonna be girl-on-girl action, I'm available.
You tell that to every female from age 2 to 82, Val grumbles.
Well, yeah.
He gives a faux, offended look.
I don't want anyone to feel left out.
He pushes away from the door and waltzes in, settling on the other side of Val.
Dude trouble?
Val drops her head into her hands.
Yeah. My boyfriend decided we need an open relationship.
So he wants to eat out and still come home for dinner?
Yup.
And you're not down with that?
Duh. I prefer guys who are faithful. You royals might not understand that.
Ouch, Val, what did I ever do to you?
He rubs his chest in mock pain. You have a penis, therefore you're automatically on the wrong side. He waggles his eyebrows.
But I do great things with my penis, ask any of the girls at Aster.
Like Abby Kincaid? Val challenges. I jerk my head toward Easton in shock. You hooked up with your brother's ex? He slumps into the cushions, his cheeks reddening.
So what if I did? I thought you hated Reed.
Wow, it's one thing for the royal brothers to fight at home, but this kind of public dissension is new and uncomfortable. And as mad as I am at Reed, I don't like seeing this rift between the brothers. It makes me awkwardly sympathetic toward Reed, which, damn it, he does not deserve. I try to change the subject. Besides assessments, what's going on at school?
Tomorrow's Halloween, but Behringer doesn't let anyone wear costumes to school.
Val shrugs.
But there's a party at the Montgomery house after the game on Friday. Everyone gets kitted out.
I make a face. Pass. I'm not a big fan of Halloween. My mom worked nights at the clubs, so growing up I never got to go trick-or-treating like a normal kid. And I hate dressing up. I did enough of that when I was working the clubs.
What else? I ask.
Val points an accusing finger at Easton.
Well, the royals can't stand each other anymore, and Reed can't be bothered to keep the crazies in line. And anyone else with a conscience is too lazy or afraid to say something. So Astor Park has gone to shit. Every day it escalates.
I'm actually afraid someone's gonna get physically hurt.
So this morning wasn't an anomaly. I frown at Easton. What's going on?
You go to school to learn, right?
He says carelessly.
Well, one of those things kids need to learn is how to take care of themselves. The world is full of bullies. They don't go away when you leave high school. Might as well learn those lessons now.
Easton, that's terrible.
What do you care? He accuses. You left everyone behind. So what if the rich little boys and girls at Astor are feeling the sting of not having a royal in charge? Aren't you happy that the place is turning out exactly like you thought it would?
Truthfully, I didn't spare Astor Park Prep a thought when I left. But now that I know people are getting hurt, the whole thing doesn't sit well with me.
No, that doesn't make me happy. Why would you say that?
He turns to look at the perfect lawn, while Val shifts uncomfortably between us.
Just let it go, Ella, he says finally.
You can't change anything. The most you can do is keep your head down and survive.
Chapter 11. The bakery is quiet when I arrive at 2. I wanted to come sooner, but Lucy would have been busy. I'd like for her to yell at me, get it out of her system, and then tell me to grab an apron and get behind the counter.
Easton wanted to come in, complaining he hadn't eaten in the last 2 hours. After a bit of pleading, he agreed to wait in the car.
Is Lucy here?
I ask the barista at the register.
The tall, gangly boy is new, and I have a sinking feeling he's my replacement.
Lucy, he calls over his shoulder. Some girl's here to see you.
Lucy sticks her head out of the back door.
Who is it?
He jerks a thumb in my direction. Her pretty face darkens when she spots me.
Oh, it's you, Ella. Give me a minute. Why don't you have a seat over there?
Yep, getting fired.
The cashier gives me a sympathetic look before turning to the next customer. I grab a seat at a spare table and wait for Lucy. She doesn't take long. After a minute or so, she bustles out of the back room with 2 mugs of coffee. One she sets in front of me, the other she sips from before setting it down. 2 weeks ago, Reed Royal showed up here looking for you. The next day, your guardian, Callum, called to let me know that you were very sick and would be out for an undetermined time. Fast forward and you're here, looking healthy, albeit thinner, than when you left. She leans forward. Do you need help, Ella?
No. I'm sorry, Lucy. I should have called, but I wasn't able to come to work.
The lie doesn't sit easy on my tongue. Lucy's a super nice lady, and I love working here. I tell her so.
I love it here, and I know you took a chance when you hired me.
She presses her lips together before taking another drink from her mug. She taps the sides of the cup before speaking.
I really needed someone, and when you weren't around and I couldn't get a hold of you, I had to move on. You understand, don't you?
I nod, because I do understand. I don't like it, but I get it.
I'm sorry, I repeat.
I'm sorry, too. Her hand dips into the pocket of her flour-dusted apron.
Here, call me if you need anything.
Anything but a job, I think.
Thanks, I say, pocketing the card.
Don't be a stranger, Ella, she says kindly, as she gets to her feet.
If I have another opening, maybe we can try again.
Thanks. My vocabulary is reduced to two words, thanks and sorry. Lucy takes another gulp of her coffee and leaves for her kitchen, while I'm left to contemplate how poorly I handled my departure. I'm not used to being the unreliable one, and even though there's a sick feeling in my stomach for having let her down, there's also a small part of me that's happy she cared. That anyone cared. Chapter 12. I hear the whispers the moment I step onto campus the next morning. I got a few smirks and stares when I was parking my car in the student lot, but it's much worse inside. A deafening hush, then an endless murmur of voices and smug laughter that follows me down the hall. At my locker, I study my reflection in the little mirror on the door, wondering if there's a piece of hair sticking up or a booger in my nose. But I look fine. Just another cookie-cutter Astor Park student in my white uniform shirt and navy skirt and blazer. My legs are bare because it's still nice enough out to not have to wear tights. But almost every girl in the hall also has bare legs, so I don't think it's my appearance that everyone is whispering about. I don't like this. It's way too similar to my first day at Astor, when nobody said a word to me because they were waiting to see which way Reed and his brothers would swing. Hate Ella or welcome her. In the end, the student body settled for something in between. Most of the kids never really warmed up to me, but that's probably because I was purposely antisocial and hung out only with Val. Today, almost everyone I pass eyes me with contempt. As I make my way to my first class, I can't stop fidgeting. I feel self-conscious and I hate it. I'm jostled violently when a dark-haired girl shoves me to the side instead of walking around me. She saunters forward a few feet, then stops to look at me. "Welcome back, Ella. How was the abortion? Did it hurt?" She smiles innocently. My jaw opens just slightly before I force it shut. The girl in front of me is Claire something or other. She used to hook up with Easton before he got bored of her. "Screw you," I mutter before brushing past her. I reach chem class at the same time as Easton. He takes one look at my face and frowns deeply.
"You okay, little sis?"
"Fine," I answer through gritted teeth. I don't think he believes me, but he doesn't say a word as he follows me into the classroom. We settle at the table we've shared since the semester started, and I notice several smirks aimed our way.
"Nice, the royal sex doll is back, huh, Easton?"
a guy drawls from the back of the room.
"Bet you and Reed are thrilled."
Easton twists around in his chair. I can't see his face, but whatever his expression is, it silences the heckler in a heartbeat. There's a cough, followed by sounds of notebooks opening and clothes rustling.
"Ignore 'em," Easton advises.
Easier said than done. My morning only gets worse. Easton's in most of my classes, and he plants his ass beside me in each one. My cheeks burn as I overhear two girls whispering about how I'm sleeping with two of my stepbrothers.
"She's definitely doing good, too," one of them says, not even bothering to lower her voice anymore. "It was probably his baby she got vacuumed out."
Easton does his turnaround and glare bloody murder thing again, but although it quiets the catty bitches, it doesn't silence the uneasy voice in my head. Val warned me there were rumors floating around about me, but is this what people actually think? That I was gone because I was having an abortion? That I slept with Reed, Easton, and Gideon? I'm no stranger to embarrassment. Stripping at the age of 15 taught me a huge lesson about humiliation, but knowing that everyone at school is saying all this horrible stuff about me has me blinking back tears.
I have Val, I remind myself. And she's the only person in Astor Park whose opinion matters. And Easton, I guess. He's barely left my side since I got back to Bayview, so I think I have no choice but to consider him a friend. Even if I do despise his brother. After class, I head back to my locker to exchange textbooks because they don't all fit in my bag. Easton disappears down the hall, but not before squeezing my arm when we encounter yet another flurry of nasty whispers.
So, today's Easton's day?
I tense up at the sound of Jordan Carrington's voice. I was wondering how long it would take for that bitch to roll out the unwelcome mat. Rather than answer, I grab my world history text off the top shelf and replace it with my chem book.
That's the arrangement, right? You alternate between Reed and Easton? Monday, Wednesday, and Friday you do Reed. Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday you do East.
Jordan cocks her head.
What about Sundays? Is that reserved for one or both of the twins?
I slam the locker door and turn to smile at her. Now, on Sundays I bone your boyfriend, except for the times he's busy, then I do your dad. Her eyes flash with anger.
Watch your mouth, bitch.
Keeping my smile in place becomes a strain.
Watch yours, Jordan.
Unless you want me to smack you again, I prompt, reminding her of the beatdown I gave her in the gym last month. She releases a throaty laugh.
Go ahead and try. Let's see how far you get when you don't have Reed to protect you.
I take a step closer, but she doesn't even flinch. I don't need Reed's protection. I never did.
Oh, really?
Yeah, really. I jam one finger in the center of her chest, right between her perky boobs. I'm capable of taking you down all by myself, Jordan.
It's a whole new era here at Astor Park, Ella. The Royals don't call the shots anymore. I do. One word from me, and every single student at this school will be happy to make your life miserable.
Gee, I'm terrified. Her lips curve.
You should be.
Whatever. I'm sick to death of this chick's power trips. Get the hell out of my way. She tosses her shiny brown hair over one shoulder.
What if I don't feel like it?
Everything okay here?
A male voice asks. We both turn to see Sawyer standing there. His red-headed girlfriend, Lauren, is with him. She glances uneasily at Jordan, then me.
This doesn't concern you, little Royal.
Jordan doesn't even look at him, but she does take the time to sneer at Lauren.
Doesn't concern you either, Donovan. So why don't you and Sawyer get out of my face? Or is it Sebastian? I can never tell those two apart.
An evil gleam lights her face.
What about you, sweetie? Can you tell them apart? Or do you keep your eyes closed when they're doing you?
I'd wondered if Lauren knew about the twin switches Sawyer and Sebastian were pulling on her, and the expression on her face right now answers that question. Instead of shocked, she looks embarrassed and indignant. But the girl has bigger balls than I thought, because she faces Jordan's mocking gaze and says,
"Fuck off, Jordan."
Then she clasps Sawyer's hand and drags him away from us. Jordan laughs again.
That whole family is twisted, huh? But I bet you get off on that, just like that slut Lauren. Right, Ella? A dirty stripper like you probably enjoys getting tag-teamed by two royals.
Are we done here? I ask tightly. She winks at me.
Oh, sweetie, no. We're never gonna be done. In fact, we're just getting started.
She flutters her fingers in a dainty wave. Then strolls down the hall, without a backward look. I watch her go, wondering what the hell kind of chaos I've come back to. At lunch, Valerie and I sit at a table in the corner of the room, where I try to pretend that we're the only two people who exist. It's hard, though, because I can feel everyone's eyes on me, and it's making me nervous. Val takes a bite of her tuna melt.
Reed's staring at you. Of course he is. I shift around and spot him at a table jam-packed with football players. Easton's there too, but he's all the way on the other side of the table, instead of in his usual spot next to Reed. I spare a glance at Reed, who's watching me with piercing blue eyes. The same eyes that grew heavy-lidded every time we kissed, that blazed hotly every time we were in the same room. Are you ever going to tell me what went down between you two? I tear my gaze away and force some pasta in my mouth. Nope, I say lightly. Aw, come on, you know you can tell me anything, Val urges. I'm a vault. My hesitation doesn't stem from a lack of trust. Sharing just isn't natural for me. I'm more comfortable swallowing my emotions. But Val's expression is so earnest that I feel obligated to offer a few details. We were together. He screwed up. We're not together anymore. Her lips twitch. Wow. Anyone ever tell you you're a terrible storyteller? I grimace. It's all I've got right now. Fine, I won't bug you about it anymore. Just know that I'm here to listen whenever you're ready to talk. She uncaps her water bottle. So what are we doing tonight? Aren't you sick of me already? I tease. After the disappointing meeting with Lucy, I went back to Val's and we pigged out on cake and watched all three of the Step Up movies. Easton wandered off in the middle of the second one and didn't come back. Hey, I'm in mourning. She glumly sticks out her lower lip. I need you to distract me so I don't think about Tam. Halloween was our favorite holiday. We used to do couples costumes. Aw, did he text you again? He messaged her three times last night, but Valerie had ignored them. Constantly. Now he's talking about driving down so we can talk in person. She looks stricken. Broken hearts suck. Don't I know it? As if on cue, my phone sounds the text message alert. I wince when I see Reed's name on the screen. Don't read it, I order myself. Like an idiot, I read it. Stop acting like you don't give a damn about me. We both know you do. I clench my teeth. Ugh, arrogant ass. Another message pops up. You missed me when you were gone, same way I missed you. We'll get through this. No, we won't. I want to shout at him to stop texting me, but the one thing I know about Reed Royal, he's a selfish jerk. He does what he wants when he wants it. And his next message is just a reminder of that. Brooke was a mistake. Happened before we met. Will never happen again. Just the sight of Brooke's name has me curling my fist around my phone. Before I can stop myself, I type back a blunt message. I'll never forgive you for sleeping with her. Leave me alone. You know I'm still here, right? Val's dry remark brings on a guilty flush. I quickly shove my phone in my bag and pick up my fork again. Sorry, I was just telling Reed to screw off. She throws her head back and laughs. God, I missed you, you know that? I laugh too, and for the first time all day, it's actually genuine. I missed you too, I tell her, and I mean it. When the final bell chimes, I'm more than ready to get the hell out of here. My first day back was about as fun as being waterboarded. The mean laughter, the whispers, the sneers, and nasty looks. I'm ready to lock myself in my bedroom, blast some music, and pretend that today never happened. I don't even bother going to my locker. I shoulder my bag, text Val that she should let me know if she's coming over later, and hurry out to the parking lot. Then I stop in my tracks, because Reed is leaning against the driver's side of my car. What do you want now? I snap. I'm sick and tired of him getting in my face all the time, and I hate how good he looks right now. The weather is growing cooler, so his dark hair is windblown, and his sharp cheekbones are flushed from the cold. He pushes his big, muscular body off the car and marches toward me.
Sawyer said Jordan was harassing you earlier.
The only person who's harassing me is you. I give him an icy look. Stop texting me. Stop talking to me. It's over. He just shrugs.
If I really believed that, I'd back off. But I don't.
I'll block your number, I warn.
I'll get a new phone.
I'll change my number. He snorts.
You really think I won't be able to get it?
I hug my bag against my chest like a shield. It's over, I repeat. A ball of pain lodges in my throat. You cheated on me.
I never cheated on you, he says hoarsely. I haven't touched Brooke in 6 months.
He sounds so sincere. What if he's telling the truth? What if... Don't be an idiot, an internal voice shouts. Ugh, of course he's not being sincere, and I should know better than to get sucked in by his earnest face and the tiny wobble in his voice. Growing up, I watched my mom fall for the wrong guys over and over again. They lied to her, used her, and as much as I loved her, I hated how stupid she could be when it came to men. It would take her months, almost a year sometimes, to figure out that the lying jerk in her bed wasn't worth her time, while I stood there on the sidelines and waited for her to come to her senses. I refused to be played like that. Go to hell, Reed, I mutter. I'm done with you. He moves even closer.
Yeah? So you're telling me you don't want me anymore?
That's exactly what I'm telling you. I sidestep his approach and practically fling myself at the car. But my escape attempt backfires because he swiftly turns around and backs me up against the door. The heat of his body sears right through my clothes. My pulse speeds up as he plants both palms against the car, trapping me between his arms.
You're saying I don't turn you on anymore?
He dips his head, and his warm breath fans over my neck. When I give an involuntary shiver, he laughs softly.
Admit it. You miss me.
I clamp my lips together. Reed's cheek brushes mine as he keeps whispering in my ear.
You miss the way I kiss you. You miss me sliding in bed with you at night. You miss the way it feels when I put my mouth right here.
He presses his lips against my neck, and I shiver again. That gets me another husky chuckle.
Yeah, I'm sure I don't do anything for you at all, right, baby?
Don't call me that! I shove him angrily, ignoring the loud pounding of my heart. I hate the effect he has on me. And leave me alone! A low voice sounds from behind us.
You heard her. Leave her alone.
Easton stalks up to us and latches a steely hand on Reed's shoulder. Despite being a year younger, Easton is as tall and ripped as his brother. It takes zero effort for him to yank Reed away from me.
This is a private conversation, Reed says, unfazed at being manhandled.
Yeah? Easton glances at me. You in the mood to talk to our big bro, little sis? Nope, I answer with forced cheerfulness. Easton grins.
There you go, Reed. Conversation's over.
The mocking glint in his eyes dissolves, replaced by irritation.
Besides, Dad just texted. He wants all of us to come home ASAP. He and Brooke have some announcement to make.
My gaze flies to Easton's. Brooke? With a harsh laugh, he turns to Reed.
What, you didn't tell her?
Tell me what, I demand. Why the hell is Brooke at the house? Reed shoots his brother a stony look.
Gee, I wonder why you didn't mention it.
Easton shrugs at me.
Dad and Brooke got back together.
My whole body runs cold.
What?
Why would Callum ever get back together with that witch? And how can I possibly face her again after what I witnessed in Reed's bedroom that night?
My legs feel wobbly, and my hands begin to shake. I hope the boys don't notice how hard I'm trembling, that they don't see how shaken up I am by this news. Going home is suddenly the last thing I want to do.
Chapter 13. One by one, our cars pull into the grand circular driveway of the Royal Estate. My convertible, Easton's pickup, Reed's Range Rover, and the Rover the twins share. I remain in the car as I watch the royal brothers slam doors and disappear through the side door of the mansion. I can't believe Brooke is in there. I can't believe Reed forgot to mention it. In all the times he's gotten in my face and mocked me about how he's gonna win me back and how I still want him, he couldn't tell me that Brooke was back. But of course he didn't say anything. He thinks if he pretends he never touched Brooke, if he pretends she doesn't exist, that maybe I'll forget about her. I won't, though. Ella Harper doesn't forget. Ever. I take a deep breath and order myself to get out of the car. The internal command fails, because I stay put. It's not until the side door swings open that I scramble out of the driver's seat.
Ella!
Brooke calls out, smiling from ear to ear. I grab my backpack and round the car, trying to bulldoze past her, but she steps into my path. I've never wanted to punch anyone more than I want to punch this woman. She's as blonde and fake as I remember. Decked out in an expensive mini dress, sky-high stilettos, and enough diamonds to fill a Tiffany shop. I have nothing to say to you, I announce. She laughs.
Oh, darling, you don't mean that.
Yes, I do. Now get out of my way.
Not until we have a little girl chat,
she chirps.
I can't have you going in there until we get a few things straight.
Disbelief makes my eyebrows soar. There's nothing to set straight. For some reason, I find myself lowering my voice, even though she and Reed deserve that I scream it from the rooftops. You slept with Callum's son.
Did I?
She titters again.
Because it seems that if I did, and that if someone in this house knew about it,
she gives me a pointed look.
Then Callum would have learned about it by now.
She's got me there. And now I'm pissed at myself for keeping my mouth shut. One word to Callum, and Brooke would be history. He'd throw her out on her ass faster than you can say cheating shrew. But he'd throw Reed out, too. He might even disown him. God, I'm sick. I'm screwed in the head. Why else would I care what happens to Reed Royal? Brooke smiles knowingly.
Oh, you poor, pathetic girl. You're in love with him.
I clench my teeth. She's wrong. I don't love him anymore. I don't.
I tried to warn you. I told you that the royals would ruin you, but you didn't listen.
And because of that, you punished me, I say sarcastically.
Punished you?
She blinks in what looks like genuine confusion.
What exactly do you think I did, sweetie?
I gape at her. You slept with Reed. I walked in on you two. Or have you conveniently forgotten that? Brooke waves a hand.
Oh, you mean the night you ran off? Sorry to disappoint you, but there was no excitement to be had that night.
You were naked, I stutter.
I was proving a point.
She rolls her eyes at my bewildered expression.
Reed needed to learn a lesson.
That you're a cheating liar?
No, that this is my house.
She gestures to the mansion behind us.
He doesn't call the shots anymore.
I do. Brooke fingers a strand of her shiny golden hair before tucking it behind her ear.
I wanted to show him what happens when he gets out of line. I wanted him to recognize that I can destroy him without any effort. And see how easy it was? I take off my dress, and poof, his relationship with you disappears. That, my darling, is called power.
I bite the inside of my cheek. I don't know what to believe anymore. Did Reed bargain for this with her? She'd lie and pretend she didn't sleep with him in exchange for... what? Does it matter? They slept together at some point, and if he's capable of betraying his own father like that, think of how easy it will be for him to betray me. I can't take that chance. I know what I saw in the bedroom. Brooke was naked, and he just sat there and said nothing. If I let Reed and Brooke plant these seeds of doubt, it's only a matter of time before I do something stupid. Like, forgive him. And then he'll hurt me again, and I'll have nobody to blame for it but myself. You slept with Callum's son, I repeat, letting my disgust for her show on my face. Doesn't matter if you didn't hook up that night. You still cheated on him with his own son. She just smiles. Nausea shoots up my throat. I trail off. Ugh, no insult in the world can do this woman justice. I'm what? She mocks. A tramp? A gold digger? Any more slut-shaming you want to do? I don't understand why we girls can't stick together, but honestly, honey, your opinion of me doesn't matter. This will be my home soon, and I'll be the one calling the shots. You should try to get on my good side. She arches one brow. I remind myself that I've run into Brooke's kind 100 times before. She's a backroom bully, sweet to all the people with money, snotty to the girls who can't help her up the ladder, and downright evil to anyone who threatens her. So I take courage in the fact that she finds me threatening, and direct an arched eyebrow right back. Callum will never let you kick me out. And even if he did, I wouldn't care. I already tried to run away from here, remember?
But you came back, didn't you, darling?
Because he forced me to, I mumble.
No, because you wanted to. You can claim to hate the royals all you want, sweetie, but the truth is, you want to be part of this family. Any family, really. Poor orphan Ella needs someone to love her.
She's wrong. I don't need that. I was on my own for 2 years after Mom died. I can do it again. I'm fine being alone. Right?
A few gentle nudges, and I guarantee Callum will come around to my way of thinking. Brooke says, it's up to you which direction I nudge him in. Do you want to continue living the royal lifestyle, or do you want to be shaking your ass for dollar bills again? You're in charge of your own destiny.
She points a lacquered nail to an empty space next to her.
There's still room for you over here.
We both spin around at the sound of a car engine. Gideon's SUV comes to an abrupt stop behind Easton's truck. The eldest royal brother hops out of the driver's seat, takes one look at us, and asks, "What's going on here?"
"Just welcoming Ella back into the fold," Brooke answers, winking at me. "Come here and give me a kiss, darling."
Gideon looks like he'd rather kiss a cactus, but he still trudges over and plants a cool peck on Brooke's cheek. "What's this all about?" he mutters. "I skipped my afternoon classes and drove 3 hours to get here, so it better be important."
"Oh, it's important." Brooke gives us a cryptic smile. "Let's go inside, and your father and I will tell you all about it."
5 minutes later, a grim-faced Callum ushers us into a room at the front of the house. His hand hovers protectively at the small of Brooke's back. And Brooke, she looks smugger than a cat at a fish market. The room is impeccably decorated in what I've termed as Southern Plantation chic.
The walls are covered in heavy cream wallpaper. There are several inches of molding that adorn the ceiling. The room is big enough that there are two seating areas, one near the floor-to-ceiling windows that are draped in peach silk fabric, and one closer to the doors. Brooke takes a seat in one of the light green and peach chairs by the fireplace. Above the mantel is a gorgeous painting of Maria Royal. There's something horribly wrong about Brooke sitting in this room in front of that painting. Something sacrilegious. After pouring a glass of whiskey, Callum positions himself behind Brooke. One hand on the top of her chair, and one hand clutched around a tumbler, nearly overflowing with liquor. Gideon wanders to stand near the windows, hands in his pockets as he stares out at the front lawn. Easton and I start walking toward him, but Callum's voice stops us.
Sit down. You too, Gideon.
Gideon doesn't move. He doesn't even acknowledge that Callum has spoken. Reed takes one look at his dad and one look at Gideon and makes up his mind in an instant. He walks over to his brother and stands beside him. The lines are clearly drawn. I watch as Callum's fingers curl into the back of the chair. His body sways toward his eldest son's, but he stays rooted in place at Brooke's side. What hold does she have on him? She can't be that good in bed.
We have an announcement.
Easton and I exchange a wary look. The twins are on my other side, wearing identical frowns of suspicion.
Brooke is having a baby.
A collective whoosh greets that statement, as we all inhale in shock. When the last word leaves his mouth, Callum lifts the glass of liquor and drinks, and drinks, and drinks, until the entire glass is empty. Brooke looks happy, and her pleasure is awful. Is it wrong to hit a pregnant woman? I fist my hands at my side in case someone, anyone, gives me the green light to vault over two sofas and a side table and wail on her until she cries for mercy. She's killing this family, and I hate her for that as much as anything.
What's that got to do with us?
Easton finally asks. His voice is dripping with insolence.
It's a royal baby, which means it will have the royal last name. We're getting married.
Callum is implacable. I guess this is what he sounds like in the boardroom, but this isn't a business deal. It's his family. Brooke raises her left hand and spreads her fingers. By the window, Reed's entire body grows rigid. Beside me, Easton growls.
That's Mom's ring, Sebastian spits out. You can't give her Mom's ring!
Sawyer picks up a vase from the side table and throws it across the room. It doesn't come anywhere near Brooke, but the crash makes us all flinch.
That's fucking bullshit! It's not her ring.
Callum threads a shaky hand through his hair.
It might look like it. But your mother's ring is upstairs, I promise you that.
I gawk at him. What kind of man gives his new wife a ring that looks like his dead wife's ring? And what kind of woman wants that? This game that Brooke is playing is too twisted for me. It's like she's getting off on hurting everyone.
Your promises aren't worth the dust under that chair.
Gideon says to his father. He's cold and unyielding, a sharp contrast from his usual mild-mannered demeanor. Of all the royal boys, Gid has always been the calmest. But he's not at all calm right now.
You can make all the babies you want with her, but they're not part of our family and never will be.
He pushes forward, striding all the way over to Brooke and Callum. I hold my breath as he looms in front of them.
You will never belong here,
he tells her, so matter-of-factly that it brings a frown to her lips.
No matter who you spread your legs for, You'll never be more than a whore from Salem Street.
Brooke smiles. And you'll never be more than a rich man's forgotten son whose mother killed herself.
Gideon flinches. Then he